Hello, everyone. This is episode 37 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. Once again, I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneinCanada.ca, alongside Justin Louis. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
I'm very good. We missed last week, so we have a lot of news to get to, but I did want to take a couple minutes just quickly to talk about what happened last week. It was Sunday night, which is when we record now. Just after 10 p.m. Eastern, I always just take a quick look over the show notes, and right before I send it to you, I usually check Twitter quickly, the RSS feeds quickly, see if any news is happening, and I notice this tweet from CNN saying, Barack Obama to address the nation at 10:30 p.m., and it was funny because I just breezed right by it and went right back to the show notes, and then about a minute later, I thought, boy, that's weird. Why would he go on at 10:30 at night on a Sunday night? That doesn't make any sense, so by the time I went back to Twitter, there was another breaking alert that said it seems to be about national security, which then Twitter was suddenly ablaze with, oh, there's an asteroid coming, or weird, like just everybody doing jokes. And I was kind of uneasy. I'm thinking, just to address the nation out of the blue at 10:30, I hope something bad hasn't happened. And then sure enough, a couple minutes later, the rumor started happening that they had got Osama bin Laden, and you texted me and said, should we delay the show? And it was actually me who said, yeah, let's just delay it an hour and then we'll record. And you said, no, let's do it tomorrow. And I'm glad you did, because I was just glued to the coverage for an hour. And it was kind of incredible to follow the whole thing on Twitter.
Yeah, totally. That was the power of Twitter. I mean, you know, this stuff spreads like wildfire, and it's amazing how you are able to find out information so quickly before, you know, major news media even gets a hold of it on TV.
And the part that I thought was kind of interesting is there's all this talk now about Twitter and to some degree Facebook sort of taking over for news. And I find that you still rush to CNN and these other news sources. It's more kind of taking the temperature on the thing and seeing how other people feel about it, and not to downplay the tragedy in Japan or these other things. But that's happening halfway across the world, and you're sympathetic to the people, but you don't have a total emotional connection to it. This is sort of the first thing that affects us here in North America, and I found it kind of telling that when it was a rumor status, people were saying it, the joke started. Then shortly after Obama actually gave the speech, you saw the whole tone of Twitter change for a couple hours. Gone were all the jokes, and suddenly there was the people reflecting back on that day in 9/11 and people tweeting and retweeting people's names and loved ones' names. And it was just, you did get this sense that, hey, this is this emotional thing that everybody is kind of taking together. And it was funny that you just saw that shift of my stream was just full of these kind of silly jokes. And then it went to really serious. And then the next day, of course, the jokes and all the typical internet memes came back. But you got that couple hours of just an outpouring of people's emotions. And you could actually hear people, not hear them literally, but sense they're wrestling with how they're supposed to feel about that. There's the excitement of, hey, this guy is a scumbag and kind of deserves this. Here's some justice. But then also the kind of the pain to remember back to that time. So it was a pretty amazing experience from that standpoint.
Yeah, it definitely was a big news story. But let's focus on what we have to present for this week of the iPhone Podcast. We have some pretty interesting stories. And as always, Justin always finds these gems in the App Store. So let's get right to it.
Sounds good.
One of the biggest stories, in quotes, has been the special, magical, mythical white iPhone 4, and it finally hit stores. We ended up posting a couple pics of, you know, the white iPhone actually selling in Canada before its official launch, and that was at Future Shop in Vancouver and other stores across the country. You were able to just buy white iPhone 4s from Bell or Virgin in stores.
Yeah, in Canada, I saw that a bunch of people were reporting being able to buy it, I think up to 2 days early. I think the official day was Thursday, but some people were getting it Tuesday night and into Wednesday. And then I think what happened is maybe Apple sent out notices. I think some people just got them in and figured they could sell them, because I knew a couple people who actually were looking to buy it. So I contacted them, said, hey, it's ready to go. And then sure enough, they went to the stores and they said, oh no, it was an accident. They weren't supposed to go out until Thursday. So the story has gone on for almost a year. It's interesting that it's finally done. I actually got my hands on one because a family member bought one and wanted me to go help them get it set up. It is nice. I'm glad I went for the black. And as if we hadn't had enough news coverage over one silly color, even when it comes out, we had a quick bit of controversy over it being thicker, which I think now people realize it was one blog having one, either their little stick they were measuring it was bent, or they just got a fluky one, because I know when I looked at it and kind of did my eyeball comparison, we had two black and a white there. They all were the same. So, and then Consumer Reports used professional tools to measure it. So it is not thicker.
Yeah. Unless you get a weird one. I mean, the difference in thickness, I don't even think you can tell by the human eye. People were using digital calipers to sense the thickness. And like you said, Consumer Reports, it's not thicker, it's the exact same. Even Phil Schiller, an Apple executive, he sent a direct message to a user who asked about the white iPhone 4. And he said, it's the same, it's not thicker. So the white iPhone 4, it's, you know, I think Apple also explained why it took them so long to get the white iPhone 4 out. Part of that was just the white getting in the way of some of the sensors. And this is when Apple and Steve Jobs, they sort of clarified why the white iPhone 4 was delayed. And this was in part of their location gate sort of press release, how they sort of talked about how the old location tracking, they weren't actually tracking anyone.
Yeah. I guess we do have to go over that in more detail, because I don't know how much we've talked about it 2 weeks ago when we did it. Bottom line, I think now for most people listening who don't dig deep into this stuff, Apple has responded. It's funny the double standards we have in this industry. Apple are the bad guys for taking a week to respond and then having a fix out less than a week after that, within a few days, but we still have something like 80 to 90% of Android, the entire user base, being on two versions ago. Imagine if they had to release some kind of update to deal with this location stuff. It'd be years before people got their hands on it. So the bottom line is, as I mentioned when we first reported the story, blogs, news stories, all jumped the gun. This data wasn't malicious. It wasn't being uploaded to Apple. It wasn't even tracking you identical. Half of it wasn't even your phone doing it. Your phone was downloading this subset of data to help your phone locate things. And they admitted they probably shouldn't have stored a year's worth in an unencrypted file. But if you update to the newest version of the iPhone iOS, that data will be removed. And from now on, they're going to keep, I think, a week's worth and encrypt it. So there's nothing to worry from that standpoint any longer.
Yeah, basically, I think the biggest, you know, issue with this was that the file was unencrypted on your phone, and anyone who, you know, wanted to find out where your phone had been, they could find out. But even then, when I looked at my own map, it showed, you know, places where my phone has never been. So, obviously, you know, it's just people are paranoid with their location being shown, but at the same time, people are checking into Facebook and Foursquare. I've mentioned this before. People are openly, you know, sharing the location with friends on Google Latitude. So, I mean, but like, you know, to fix this, iOS 4.3.3 has been released, so it has made those changes. Back to that white iPhone, Phil Schiller mentioned that the time that they spent working on the white iPhone, they actually, according to him and Steve Jobs, the work that they poured into the white iPhone 4, that allowed them to deliver the white iPad 2. So it's pretty amazing how they're able to craft their responses in the media and to make everything sound so perfect. But, you know, people have white iPads. They now have the white iPhone. And I can't believe people would wait in line for a new color of an iPhone.
I predicted that. It doesn't surprise me. I think you'll hear Apple at some point at WWDC break out the white iPhone numbers, and they'll be higher than you think. I don't believe that many people who had the black one went and switched, but I bet you there was a decent number who did that. But there was a lot of people who were kind of waiting. Combine that with the rumor that there isn't a new iPhone 4 in the immediate future, I figured it would be a pretty big seller. And if you look at the way all the smartphones are going, we saw almost everybody move in the direction to copy the 3GS or the 3G iPhone. So now to have the iPhone 4 is already a unique design, make it white now, it's a pretty unique phone. So people who do care about that element, it's a pretty neat looking phone. I think the one other thing that's worth mentioning about that story, and then we can finally be done with it, is the new white iPhone supposedly has a slightly different proximity sensor, including it even looks a little different. But I've also heard other people reporting that they've recently returned their black one for proximity issues and they don't have it anymore. So if you're somebody who's sitting on an iPhone 4 that still has issues while you're talking on the phone, the screen going on and off incorrectly, now may be the time to finally go and try to get them to exchange it because it supposedly works. I've never noticed it because I don't usually talk on the phone. I use my earbuds. But if you are still having that problem, now is probably the time to talk to Apple about it.
Yeah, I know how Apple likes to, you know, quietly make these changes. Another example is the bumper case for the iPhone. Apple has actually released a second generation of the bumper. It allows for more room at the bottom to plug in other 30-pin connectors from accessories. It's actually a lot wider because the current version only allows the white iPhone, the Apple white cable to plug into the bottom, whereas the next generation, there's more room to plug in other cables, which I think Apple released this just prior to the Verizon iPhone, but hasn't been talked about much. And we did post about it the other day. So if you want to check out stories, it's on the blog.
I think we should go off script for 1 second here and talk about your use of a bumper or lack of use of a bumper. And why don't you tell people about that?
Yeah, people might have already, by the time you hear this podcast, you probably read about my blog post. But I've been using my iPhones without cases, just protecting them with thin films like the invisible shield. And I've never had a problem with damaging my phone. I always know where it is. I always, you know, make sure it's placed in a secure spot. But just the other night, I happened to have my iPhone plugged in to my computer, and it was just sort of off on the side, and I just sort of moved my mouse and it knocked the phone onto the ground. But part of our condo here, we have some granite tile, so I heard this kind of different popping sound, and I was like, oh no. I immediately knew that it was more than just a little nick in the corner, so I picked up my phone and the entire back glass panel was just smashed. So that was pretty shocking. I think I mumbled a swear. I was pretty bit upset. I ended up making an appointment to go to the Genius Bar down at the Apple Store. And lo and behold, it was only $29 to get that back panel replaced. And I was pretty surprised that it was, you know, cheap. Because if you take a look at what other people are charging on Craigslist from these third-party Apple repair stores, they're charging you $50. Why not just pay $29 and go straight to the Apple store? But I do understand that there aren't Apple stores in every single city across the country. But $29 and it was fixed.
What were your expectations going in? Did you think it was going to be a lot more than that? Did you think they might replace it for you anyways? Like, did they say anything when you booked the appointment? What were your expectations?
I booked the appointment online. My expectations, I actually, you know, obviously the power of Google, I read about how other people were able to get it replaced for $29, but there wasn't a definite confirmation of that price. Some people like said, yeah, I was able to get it, but I didn't hear a lot of stories about that. So, you know, obviously when you go into an Apple store, sometimes it might work some magic. He was just like $29. I'm like, okay. I'm like, that's better than getting a new phone. I know that the front panel apparently is a lot more. The front panel to get it replaced would be about $199. So I'm just lucky it landed on the backside.
Yeah, I was surprised when I read that story from you. I expected it to be a lot more, but that makes me feel a little bit better about it. Hopefully it doesn't happen to me. It's funny. I think I've mentioned on the show before, I'm so careful. I don't usually use a case. I'm insanely careful with my phones, and I got the 3G the day it came out in Canada, and then I've had each one since. So we're looking at almost 3 years, whatever that is, having an iPhone, and I just dropped mine the other day for the first time ever, and I just knocked it off like a nightstand right onto carpet, so it was fine, but I kind of was nervous. I'm like, oh, there goes my record that I always brag to everybody who breaks their phones, that I haven't even dropped mine. And the other thing I'll mention quickly is, we've said it before, I've always used my phones without cases. I don't like cases. They're bulky. They kind of ruin the look and feel of the phone. But I do really like Apple's bumper case. It doesn't add that much bulk to it. It still looks really good. And I find it actually makes the phone more comfortable. I used it for months when I got it free originally. Then about a month or two ago, I used it for another 4 or 5 weeks without it again for some reason. I can't remember. I just took it off one day to clean and then forgot to put it back on. And then I went back to it. And as soon as I went back to it, I was like, no, I like the feel of this bumper. So if you're someone who kind of doesn't use a case normally, you might want to check out the bumper. And I know I have a family member who has the bumper and has dropped it numerous times onto cement and everything else and not had a problem. So I think it is a pretty good case for protecting it.
Yeah, as you can probably guess, I do have the bumper on my phone right now. When I did get the bumper, I was a pretty big fan of it. It's super snug fit. Like you said, not a lot of bulk. It does help you, does make the phone a lot more comfortable. Then I took the bumper off, and now I have it back on, and it's doing pretty well. It's doing the job. I mean, it's pretty hard to damage the back glass when you drop your phone and you have the bumper on, unless it's on a surface that's not flat. If you drop the phone, it's going to hit a corner and the bumper basically has you covered.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let me put my phone off to the side here and we will continue. Next story, moving on. Thanks for bringing that in, Justin. And no problem. Moving on, we're going to talk about rumors about Apple's new cloud service. Rumors that Apple had purchased iCloud.com from another company and reportedly paid, just under $5 million for this. Another rumor that added fuel to this story was that in the latest beta version of OS X Lion, the codename Castle was found in the build, and it gave options to migrate your account to complete your Castle upgrade. Another value there said click OK to open system preferences and complete your upgrade from MobileMe to Castle. So that is the rumor about iCloud going live, or upgrading to iCloud, replacing MobileMe.
Yeah, I think this is one of those poorly kept secrets. I think everybody now knows it's coming. You can piece this all the way back. As I've mentioned before, there was that Steve Mail like a year ago saying, hey, look for Apple next year in the cloud. As I've said, I have a strong feeling that WWDC, a good 15, 20 minutes of their presentation is going to be about their new cloud initiative. And I think it's going to be amazing. It's the one area that Apple's a little weak in. We know Apple doesn't like to be weak. We know when they want to start trashing their competitors, they like to go through that checkmark list and show all the ways they're better. So this is only a matter of time. I'm a little skeptical of that iCloud rumor, nothing to do with the name or the domain name, just that Apple would pay that much. Apple, if they paid that much, I'm guessing that company also had trademarks and different things in different countries for that name, and they were buying the whole package, because Apple doesn't normally make these kind of deals. They usually go out, get the thing trademarked for them, and then send a nice legal letter to companies and say, oh, by the way, you're giving us that domain. So I find it weird that they'd pay that much money just for a single domain. And the name, not sure if that's what they'll call it either way, but I do think we're a month away from seeing that, and hopefully we'll be able to report on that when we do our WWDC podcast.
Yeah, I think, like you said, they have a huge data center in North Carolina. Obviously, there are plans for something to go live. MobileMe has basically disappeared. So definitely something is coming up, and I mean, we can expect that pretty soon.
And the other way you got to look at it is, as I've mentioned before on the show, Dropbox has almost become the file system on the iPad. If you're serious about doing any work, like I got 20, 30 apps on my phone and my iPad with Dropbox. All my text editors have to have Dropbox. I have apps to bring in books and comic books and different things. Apple doesn't really like depending on a third party. So my guess is their new system is going to include something similar to Dropbox, and then they're going to build it right into the API. So I think the developers will have the chance. I hope they don't try to shut down Dropbox in any way or make it harder to use, because a lot of people are going to still want to use it, or if you're already using it. But I think for sure, moving forward, Apple's going to have something that works very similar to Dropbox, because it's become so important, and Apple never likes depending on a third party. There's even rumors floating around that Apple's going to do their own turn-by-turn directions, and you've seen them. They've bought mapping companies. They don't like depending on third parties for really important features of their products. So I think we can safely say there's going to be some type of Dropbox type feature coming to the iOS 5.
I mean, I think with Dropbox has such a huge lead on the free cloud storage that it's now a part of, it's what I look for when I'm, you know, looking at a particular app to download, and does it support Dropbox? That's one of the first things that people will ask. And Dropbox, you know, people are so entrenched in Dropbox now. It's so easy to implement on your Mac or iPhone that, you know, it probably would make sense for Apple to even acquire Dropbox just to sort of, you know, get them out of the scene.
Yeah, people have been asking that for a while. I'm kind of surprised they haven't, but.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, the cloud definitely should be coming. iDisk as part of Mobile Me, I mean, that does work, but Dropbox is just so easy, and a lot of developers have smartly implemented Dropbox into their apps. So, I mean, I can just think of storing your 1Password master file in Dropbox. Even what else? A lot of people have come up with different ways to store even their iTunes libraries on Dropbox, backing up to Dropbox. It's an amazing service.
Absolutely. I use it for the 1Password. Like you said, there's plenty of players out there that you can do audio and video right out of your Dropbox. But the main reason I use it is I just have a master folder on my computer that has all my documents, like work-related documents, my notes, any kind of text-based document is in one folder on my Mac. It's synced through Dropbox, and then my iPhone, iPad, whenever I want, boom. It's so amazing. You can literally be working on a document, shut your iPad and go, oh, I just thought of something, and you're walking down the street and now you have your iPhone. It's a second later, and it's perfectly in sync. There's never conflicts between the developers being smart and Dropbox having conflict resolution. You never have things not saved or the wrong thing saved. It's just flawless system for accessing files.
Yeah. Moving on here, we have a story about Condé Nast, about how they've actually rethought their iPad strategy. The New York Post is reporting that that Condé Nast is starting to sell digital magazine subscriptions on the iPad. It's going to start as early as next week. The New Yorker will lead off, followed by GQ, Wired, Golf Digest, Glamour, Vanity Fair, and more. Single issues will have their prices slashed from $3.99 to $4.99, all the way down to $1.99 an issue, which totally makes sense for a digital magazine. And it gets better. Yearly subscriptions will come in at about $20 US. So that means, yeah, you can now get, you know, digital subscriptions for cheap. And the value at what these magazines will be worth, I think it's pretty reasonable.
This is my favorite story of the week, because this is the type of stuff we talk about week in and week out. I'm so sick of every business shifting over. Like, first of all, let's be honest, music, movies, print, all these things, they've been resisting the iPad, resisting the iPhone, resisting digital distribution for so long. These guys were so slow to adapt. And then as soon as they moved over, you're thanking God. You're like, oh, finally, these idiots are coming over. And then they try to put the exact same mechanisms and price models in place that just doesn't make sense. people who really are hardcore about their magazines are going to have a subscription, and you don't pay $6 a month for Sports Illustrated. You pay $20 for the year thing, and it comes to your door every day, or you buy it in a jam because you have nothing else and you're in an airport or whatever it is. So to try to get that model, I'm not surprised that they reported poor sales, and I don't think any magazine has really done well on the iPad with this $5 for a digital download. Nobody wants to do that, but 99 cents, $1.99 per random issue, or a digital subscription for $20, that's more like it. Then you start adding sales, discounts, promotions around that. Now I think you have a winner. And then the next story on the list, completely related, is Apple has let their guard down a little bit on their policies and is now allowing Time and a couple other magazines to give the iPad version free to existing paper subscribers. So that's other good news. So now if I can go out and buy a paper subscription, but then access it on my iPad, or just get the digital only subscription, that makes magazines much more interested, because I have not bought a single magazine since having my iPad, because I'm just not paying $5 for a digital version that doesn't really offer anything unique. I don't have any real ownership of it. I have to use it on this app. It just doesn't make sense. You're basically renting a magazine for $5. Never made sense. So it's nice to see that this company making the switch, and I think you'll just see everybody else follow, and hopefully it catches on with other industries, and we may finally, as I've said again on the show, I think we're moving finally slower. I think we're finally getting the baby steps of these companies to fully embrace the digital age and realize that the customers are out there. We want this product, but we want it in a way that's easy and reasonably priced.
I mean, Apple has 160 to 180 million iTunes accounts linked to a credit card. People are ready to buy, especially in the iPad. It's such a great way to consume media, especially digital magazines. You want to get people reading your stuff, and once they do, they'll get hooked and they'll be happy to, you know, get your next issue. One interesting story is how Fortune has released an article recently called Inside Apple, and it talks about, you know, some things you've never heard about, some inside looks at Apple and how things work, and how Steve Jobs reacts to people and product failures, and how there's a secret, you know, top 100 meeting that doesn't really exist, and a really interesting story. But the only way to get it right now is on the iPad. It's $4.99 for the issue, and the issue doesn't come out until the third week of May. But yeah, it's available on the iPad. I actually purchased this magazine, this issue. That was probably the first magazine that I purchased, I would say, in the past 5 years or more. I can't remember the last time I bought a magazine.
Besides the actual, I mean, you basically bought it because it was a really interesting article and it was making news, and your job as a reporter, you had to look into it. But did you find the actual magazine anything to write home about? Was it just basically a PDF, or was there anything in their magazine? Have they done anything unique with the iPad app?
I did like that the magazine would format to whatever way you wanted to hold the iPad, to either landscape or portrait. It would format so that you wouldn't even know that you're not supposed to hold it any other way. There is no right or wrong way to read the magazine. The formatting just works, even with the photos. And I think it worked well.
You kind of bring up an interesting point there. Go off script again for a second, because I'm fairly new to using an iPad on a daily basis. Do you have a preference to use the iPad between landscape or portrait?
I like to use it in landscape. I think because when I'm doing emails, checking emails, landscape mode is the best, because you can blast through and read emails the fastest possible way. Just, you know, tap, 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 tap. If I'm reading any web page, landscape is better because it's a bit larger than portrait. Only time I use portrait is when I'm maybe reading a book in iBooks. I use portrait because the font's larger. It's just one page, one screen. I don't know, when I'm playing Words with Friends, it's you only can use in portrait. But primarily I use it in landscape, also because, you know, the smart cover just works better. It's meant to work in landscape right now, or you can use it in portrait, but you'd have to be holding it up on one side. What about you?
Oh yeah. Well, you definitely can't use the smart cover as a stand in portrait, but if you're just like laying in bed or sitting at a couch or whatever, the reason I asked that question is because it just dawned on me the other night when I was using it, and I don't have a preference whatsoever. Like, I don't find a certain way more comfortable. To me, it's completely per app basis of how the developer has handled it. And I do find that I end up using it in landscape more often because I find that developers have done a better job of using that real estate. You kind of get the sidebar, like if you're in a news app or a blog app or the email app. And really, you mentioned email. Notice how many developers have just copied the exact layout that Apple had with that email. And then you saw Gmail kind of do it with their web app, and you've seen others. That's sort of the real popular thing. So I do find that I use it in landscape, but then I find that the developers who do a good job of having it, Flipboard has a really excellent portrait mode. So I find it per app basis. When I'm in Flipboard, it's portrait. When it's other apps, that's why I brought it up. I just find it interesting that I figured most people would have a strong preference one way or the other. And to me, it's completely based on how the app developer made it. Because I find a lot of the app developers, portrait, they make it full screen with no sidebar and have this floating sidebar that you can move on and off. And I don't think you necessarily need that. I think Twitter does a good job of their portrait mode. I think Flipboard, I think developers have been a little lazy in the portrait mode and they could use a sidebar better than they do. But again, off topic, but I just thought that was interesting. I kind of expected to use it one way, and I find that developers have almost kind of forced the one way.
Yeah. On the same topic of tablets, I actually managed to try out BlackBerry's new Playbook. My brother got one through his work, and what can I say about it? It is fairly thin. I will give it that. The 7-inch screen. It's really bright, looks really nice. The only issue, though, is because it's a 7-inch screen, when you are looking at a web page or any sort of document, the Playbook can't be farther than, like, you can't hold it at sort of arm's length. It has to be sort of, it's almost like I'm just looking at my iPhone, but just with a bigger screen. So that was the issue I found with the Playbook, that, you know, do I hold it up close? I can't really hold it far away because then I just can't see anything. But other than that, it seemed to work very well. But no email, no contacts, no calendar app. That's coming. I couldn't figure out how to change to launch different apps and stuff. You actually have to go up from the bezel. There's no indicators to show you that you need to slide your finger from the bezel going up to sort of launch the multitasker. So,
yeah, I find it interesting that you brought that up, because I almost thought about bringing it up, but I didn't want to make it like we were gloating or making fun of it. But I got actually quite a bit of positive response when we discussed the Playbook a couple weeks ago. People were like, hey, I'm glad you're open-minded to look at things. I've had very limited use of it. I tried it at Best Buy quickly, and I was, like you, quite impressed by the build quality of the hardware. It's a higher quality product than I thought, especially when BlackBerry phones have seemed to get worse over the years. They're more plasticky and more poorly made. I personally do not like the screen size. I want my iPhone or my iPad. I'm in the Steve Jobs camp when it comes to that. The Playbook just, to me, still kind of feels like a big phone. It doesn't give you that full real estate that I like on my iPad. And the one little BlackBerry fail that I have to make fun of them a little bit is at our local, I've seen this at three different stores. The BlackBerry, they're trying to get this out and they're trying to get it in people's hands. And they have displays out, and including our Walmarts are going under renovation here where I live. We have two major those Supercenter Walmarts, and both have the BlackBerry prominently on display, and the iPad case is empty. For whatever reason, they haven't started. So here you got Walmart, a pretty big store, a pretty big audience. You have your chance to kind of be the only tablet in the store because the iPad thing is empty. They haven't started it. And every time I've gone to see the thing, it's messed up because it's looking for a Wi-Fi signal, and the operating system by default is set up that, like, if unless you can get by that setup screen, you can't use it. So here they are, they got this thing out for display, and as soon as it loses its signal, or probably some joker's getting rid of it, it's gone. And then I even at one point figured, oh, maybe it's just messed up. I'll reboot this thing and see if I can go back into it. And it takes like 2 minutes to boot up. I couldn't believe it. You're so spoiled by iOS, how quick it is. This thing, to reboot the thing, I thought I was back on like my Windows 95 computer or something from like 20 years ago. It was unbelievable how long this thing takes to boot up. And then it does boot right into that screen where you have to set up your internet or it won't let you buy it to even try anything. So if anyone from RIM is listening, you probably want to have your display models working a little better if you want people to actually be able to try these things.
Yeah, it's, you know, a good indicator of how a product is if you just give it to someone who has never used it before, and if they can sort of intuitively figure out what to do next, then, you know, you've done something right. With the playbook, I had to sort of figure out which button I had to press to turn the screen off. And there's a power button at the top, which you need to press kind of like the sleep. It acts as a sleep wake button.
You're right. It's absolutely not intuitive. And I think most of us geeks take the intuitiveness of the iOS for granted because we're pretty savvy users anyways. But if you have young kids in your family, like, you can just hand a 2-year-old an iPhone or an iPad and they're working their way around it. I have little cousins and stuff, and they're getting to the point that they can just go right on YouTube and navigate certain things and find videos that they've tried before or know exactly how to get into games. It's pretty amazing to see how we can't even understand sometimes how intuitive something is because it's ingrained. I always used to find it funny when older family members could barely make a mouse work. We just take it for granted. So Apple has definitely done something right when it comes to the intuitiveness of the operating system. And I don't find that BlackBerry or Google has done near as good a job in that things are not instantly obvious how they work.
Yeah, the playbook certainly was a lot lighter than the iPad, but I mean, given the size difference and the build materials, I think, you know, the phones should reflect. I mean, if only BlackBerry phones would. I think, actually, we're talking too much about BlackBerry right now, but the newest Bold that's out, it's actually pretty thin for once. There's a leaked Bold 9900 or something, and it's almost as thin as the iPhone 4 and or something like that. But it still has, you know, the same screen and the keys and stuff. But anyways, we're going to move on. Moving on here, we're going to talk about Apple. Apple has now topped Microsoft in quarterly profits for the first time. Microsoft announced its net profit for the first calendar quarter of 2011. That was a profit of $5.23 billion, which was, I think Apple beat them. For the first time, Apple surpassed Microsoft in market cap too. So, I mean, yeah, Apple is basically the company right now. It's in 5 years, its market cap has grown from $60 billion to $325 billion, which is disgusting.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. We just keep reporting it every time there's news. The point of this story was just that Apple keeps beating Microsoft in another key thing. Over the last year or so, they've slowly surpassed, but Microsoft was still ahead on quarterly profits, and now this is that first time that Apple just squeaked by them. They had just under $6 billion, and Microsoft had $5.23 billion, so it's close, but again, impressive for a company that, as good as their margins are for their products, it's still a hardware situation compared to Microsoft, who the bulk of their money is on Office and Windows, which are like pure profit. You're selling those for hundreds of dollars and they're just software. So it's impressive for Apple to done what they've done in the short period of time. And at the same time, that's why when things like Location Gate come out, now Apple's where Microsoft was. Now that they're kind of number one in all these different areas, they don't get the pass. Now everybody's skeptical of them and they're no longer that plucky little underdog. They have to face everything Microsoft used to face.
Exactly. When you're on top, people are aiming to bring you down, or they're going to, you know, there's a lot more scrutiny. You're under a microscope all the time. Let's move on to some app news. There was a big announcement. EA, Electronic Arts, they've had their revenue has increased substantially by almost 100%. And in other news as well, EA has acquired Firemint, which is the company behind Real Racing, Real Racing 2, and also the one with the landing thing with the planes. Flight Control.
Flight Control, yeah.
Yes, that was, man, dude, it'd be interesting to know, to see, you know, who still plays Flight Control. It was a great game, and it, you know, they happened to just jump on the App Store. But now it's just, you know, it's all about Angry Birds. It'd be interesting to see how their downloads are doing.
I'm interested in the story for two reasons. A, it's great to see their iOS revenue increase so significantly, and them to make special note of it goes to show you that this isn't any kind of flash in the pan. EA, we've seen things like Rovio with Angry Birds, those type of things have huge success, but it's nice to see a developer that kind of came to prominence in the old way of doing things, embracing it. When EA first started to buy up some of these iOS companies, it really sort of worried me. I thought, oh, is this EA trying to grab up some of their biggest competitors so they can kind of force their model and raise prices and reduce the number of updates? And EA certainly isn't selling all their apps for 99 cents and updating them every week like other apps. But I found that EA over the last few years has improved. Far more sales than they used to have. It's becoming quite common, at least 4, 5, 6 times a year. You can get most of the EA games for a good price. And they are still not updating them as regularly as I'd like, but they're starting to update. You used to download an EA app and it might be 6 months later, and even though there was obvious glitches or problems, they weren't taking care of it. Now they're not only updating problems, but adding features or new rosters. So it's nice to see this happen, and I hope it shifts over to their other business, because I find the same things happening in video games that we talked about with magazines. You go into a store and you buy Madden for 50, 60 bucks. That's one thing. They had to pay for that, they had to ship it to the stores, all that stuff. Then they sell the online version for basically the same price. Again, I still feel that you're basically renting that game. You don't have a physical copy. If their DRM's down or you don't have access to the internet, you don't have full play, you can't resell it the same way. So I hope what we see is happen on the iOS shifts to the other end and we see these games cheaper. I'm all for digital distribution. Just be fair with the pricing model, because we're not getting the same thing we got before, and I just want it to be fair.
Yeah, I think iOS is still has room to grow, and it's great that, you know, EA is able to, you know, come up with huge profits and increase their revenue and acquire Firemint. I mean, it'd be great to see what their next game will be or what they're gonna do. I mean, EA is great with sports and racing games, and Firemint has done well with the games that they've come out with. But let's move on to some interesting apps that people need to download. First one here, HBO Go.
Yeah, this is mostly for our US listeners, but to me, this is the app of the week, and I hope it's, again, a sign of things to come. HBO, if you're in the US and you're subscribed, you have to be a monthly subscriber, you have to pay on DirecTV or whoever you're with. It supports, I think, Comcast, DirecTV, a couple others. Basically, 4 or 5 of the providers in the U.S. are available for this app. So the app is completely free, and unlike HBO has ever done in the past, you have access to all the past episodes. So people who don't kind of follow HBO closely, they've had a lot of hit shows lately, but they've been very bizarre in their online version. They don't even make most of their stuff available to iTunes till sometimes months, if not years later. They were often very slow to DVD. It's very common nowadays for a show to finish its season and be available on DVD within a month or two. HBO, again, has always taken years. And then out of the blue, they release this free app, and you can just go back to The Sopranos or The Shield or wherever and get all the past episodes. And unfortunately, we can't use it here, so there's no hands-on review for me, but the people who have been using it say it's great. So I hope we have this in Canada soon. I hope other countries have it. And my biggest wish is I hope HBO, this is a step towards forget the cable providers, forget the satellite, just let me pay the 10, 15, 20 bucks a month, whatever it is, and get everything on the app.
Yeah, I think, you know, it sucks that it is, you know, geo-targeted only to the U.S. You know, we do have other similar apps in Canada from our media companies such as Global, and, you know, they have all those shows, but it's just not the same.
No, because they're so limited. You're A, not, for some reason, Global and CTV, it's probably a rights issue, but they don't even make all the shows that they have available. And then the shows they do make available, it's one or two episodes if you're lucky. I think it's Global or CTV, I can't remember which one, has a few Canadian shows where they have the whole season up, but that's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I think it was either the Global app that launched, and we only had like one or two episodes, and they weren't even like in order. They're just random episodes they just threw up there.
Yeah.
Next up, Groupon HD. Groupon is a new coupon, now available for the iPad and in HD there. I mean, how often do you buy Groupons? This is the issue I find with Groupons, is that you come across a killer deal, and even though you tell yourself, oh, I don't want to get this, you end up getting it, and then you just forget about it because you don't see anything. There's no physical copy of it, and if you just, you know, if you don't remember that you have it, you're not going to use it, and if it expires, you spent your money.
Well, I really don't even use Groupon or Living Social or any of these, but I love the idea because A, I like getting deals, and I like the opportunity for small and local businesses to get in on these things. So I totally love the concept, but the deals in my area are not great. And I hate to say it, but I want to support local business, but I don't support. I just live in a city that I'm not that crazy about our restaurants and different things. So I don't tend to use it. I think the only one I've ever used is when you got $20 gift card for Amazon for $10. And I think that was Living Social. But I do watch it. I think it was useful to tell people about the app being out for the iPad. I don't think this market is going anywhere, but I also think Groupon will be regretting turning down their $3 billion from Google or whatever it was, because I don't think any single entity is now going to dominate this space. It's just, it's going to become synonymous with different things. You're going to see Facebook and Twitter and Groupon and Living Social and 100 other clones. They're all going to work because you're not going to be loyal to a certain brand. You're going to be loyal to who has the deal that day for a product that you want or you need.
Yeah, the sheer number of clones that are out, it's just unbelievable. Some of them you've never even heard about before, and you sort of question the authenticity of these deals. But yeah, I mean, right now, you know, if any company offers you billions and billions of dollars, it's kind of hard to turn it down, I would say. But then moving on here, this game I'm looking at here, Unpleasant Horse. Tell me about it. I'm looking at the screens right now, and these look like My Little Ponies on like steroids or something, like on like crack or something. What's up with this?
This is scary, black. This is horse. This is a weird app that does take a little bit of discussion for a second for two reasons. The reason it's making waves is it's made by PopCap, which is a hugely popular internet online game company, probably most famous for Plants vs. Zombies. And I guess the myth behind this game is that it was designed, the idea and was developed and designed and almost fully put together in 24 hours. They have some kind of competition within their company to do this. And this was the game that came out. It's kind of a neat game. It's free, so it's worth checking out. But here's the warning. If you are squeamish or have small children, don't let the funny name and the cute graphics fool you, because it's these My Little Pony looking horses, but your horse is this black horse with a tattoo and everything else, and his whole goal is to jump, catch the cute little ponies, and then bury them down into a meat grinder. And when you put the pony into the meat grinder, blood comes pouring out and bones come. It's the weirdest game. Apple actually declined it a couple weeks ago, and everybody assumed it was because of the content, but it was actually some other hold up in what they rated it, but they actually allowed it to go in untouched. But so might not want your little kids playing it, but if you're a fan of those type of games. And it's got a really steep learning curve too. It's not the easiest game to play, but once you get going and you figure it out, it's actually kind of fun. But like I said, not for the squeamish or people with young kids. Don't let the cutesy little graphics fool you. I could just see these poor little kids, 3 years old. Oh, look, honey, look at this game. Oh, look, daddy, it's horses. And then the thing's mutilated down at the bottom with blood and guts pouring out. You're going to have traumatized kids. So take that warning. Otherwise, try it.
Okay, I just saw a little white horse die, and that was pretty traumatic. Anyways, sorry. Moving on here. Ramp Champ is now free.
Just a cool game that actually has pretty good physics. It's a skee ball game that was kind of one of the most popular games a couple years ago on the App Store, and they finally just decided to make it free, but there still remains in-app purchases for other levels. So if you remember seeing that Ramp Champ up near the top of the lists a couple years ago and you didn't buy it, now's your chance to try it for free.
Nice, nice. And you also put in here the May issue of Wired Magazine is free on the iPad. I did get a chance to check it out. You download the Wired app, which is free, and the issue inside is a free download. So if you're looking to check out Wired, it's a great way.
Yeah, smart for them to make it free to try to suck people into buying it. But again, $5 an issue, I think, with Wired, as we discussed earlier in the show, people aren't going to do it. And to be honest, I wasn't thrilled with the whole process. It's something like a 300 or 400 megabyte download, I don't have huge caps or anything, so I'm not complaining from that standpoint, but I know that would hurt a lot of people. But it did take forever. It actually like had errors a couple times, including I actually had to restart the download a couple times. And then when you finally get this app, it does have some gimmicks, and you can kind of scroll up and down, and certain articles have this kind of bonus content that flows below, but the gimmickry wasn't enough to overcome that like 400 megabyte download. Like if you're going to build an audio and video and really make it spectacular, then fine. But I don't think it should be a big download. Make it on demand, kind of like The Daily does it, or you better make it damn good for $5 and that big a download. And I just didn't think it was worth it. Again, download it for free, but otherwise I'm not that impressed.
Yeah. That's the one sort of stumbling block is that these magazines, you know, they want high resolution ads and graphics and all of that adds up, and, you know, magazines do take a while to download. So, you know, it's certainly something that they're going to have to overcome. Magic Piano for iPhone, free with in-app purchases. I played Magic Piano before on the iPad. Really neat concept from the makers of, what's that flute thing?
Yeah.
My brain's not working.
Me neither, but it's Smule is the company.
Yes. And yes, that's right.
The Magic Piano was a big hit for the iPad, and now there's a free version for the iPhone. I haven't tried it. I just wanted to make people aware of it.
Okay, and a few updates today. ITV and Feedly.
I'm not sure if you've used ITV. If you have, then tell us about it, because I haven't really tried it. I downloaded it quickly, but haven't really had a chance to play with it. But I know it was big news that they added Hulu support, which again would be great for US listeners, but unfortunately the rest of us around the world have no access to that. Have you used it besides that?
No, it says it's, you know, it is the number one TV guide on the App Store. You see what's airing. I haven't really been watching TV that much other than playoff hockey. Most of the time when I do want to record something, I'm using my Optic app from Telus. I can set my PVR recording straight from my iPhone, which is awesome. But yeah, I mean, for those who are addicted to shows, I mean, I think, you know, it's a pretty neat way to track everything. I'm just thinking about the days of TV Guide, how those days are sort of done.
Yeah, because with the guide sort of built into your TV, that replaced kind of 90% of it. And then I use an iOS app that just keeps the schedule and it has a checklist for when you've watched things. So I remember the TV Guide was just something I love. Like my family, when I was a kid, we subscribed to the actual paid TV Guide, and the day it would come in like 3 or 4 days in advance of the next week. And it was an event for me to get it. Can't wait to see what was on and see what the articles were. And now it's just another thing that the next generation will go, what did they had a paper guide that came to your house? Wow. How weird is that?
Yeah, I just remember the Friday issue of our local paper would have like a free sort of TV guide, and you'd be able to see what sort of movies would be coming up later in the week that you could check out. Oh my God, it's on TV. Next up, we're going to move on to Feedly.
Yeah, I'll briefly mention Feedly. I did recommend this at some point on the podcast. It's a news/RSS reader. I recommended it highly for the iPhone, and it was a paid app. Now they've updated it to work on the iPad, and they've made it free, I think, permanently, but I can't say for sure.
It is free, yep.
It's free right now, but I'm not sure if it's staying free, so you still might want to jump on it. And Feedly, for the news people out there, is kind of a cross between Flipboard and, say, Reader or mobile RSS. It's, you can put in your Google Reader account, you can curate your own news, what we've discussed. It has some of the sharing options, but it doesn't quite let you get as in-depth as something like a Reader or mobile RSS. And then it gives you more kind of customability as, say, something to Flipboard, and doesn't have quite as dramatic of a thing. It doesn't really have a newspaper layout, but it's very clean, very smooth. Everything's very clean looking. None of the articles, you don't go to their website. They pull in all the content and frame it all nicely. So I would say it's kind of like a hybrid between Reader, Flipboard, and, say, Instapaper. And so if you hear what we're talking about every week, all these different news apps, here's another one that's free that will be a nice niche for some people. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. An app that I just started testing out, it's called WakeMate. Basically, it's one of those apps that keeps track of your sleep cycle and wakes you up at an optimum time. But the difference with WakeMate is there's actually a separate attachment that you wear to your wrist, and it's connected via Bluetooth, and that's how it tracks your sleep cycle, as opposed to some of the other apps where you sort of need to put your iPhone beside your head underneath your pillow. So I've tested it out for a couple nights. Tough to say if it's worked. I do find that the wrist strap is a bit too tight for the size of my wrist, but it's definitely a neat concept. So WakeMate, I'll be writing a review of that coming up, and that's something for people to stay tuned for.
Yeah, I'll look forward to that review, because I've heard different apps and different mechanisms to do that, and it sounds interesting. I love that we're getting more into the science of those type of things. So if there's something that you can just sleep 20 minutes less or something, and it's going to make you feel a lot different, I find that pretty interesting. And the fact that you can now do it from an iPhone is pretty amazing. We're running close to an hour here. Our Skype connection's getting a little wonky here, so I'll just do one quick review. This is an app that I absolutely love. It's a perfect example of what the iOS is capable of. It's so smart and so clever. And the people who are going to listen to what I say here and like it are going to love it. And 90% of people are going to go, why the heck do I ever need this? But the app is called Seamless, and you have to go into the Mac App Store and download a free Seamless app for your Mac, and then you download the iOS version, and it's 99 cents. And the way the developer tries to sell it is that you're either on your iPhone or on your computer, and you're rocking out to a tune, and then you suddenly have to go, and you just press this button on the app, and it transfers that song to whatever. So if you're on your computer, it's going to transfer you over to your phone, and vice versa. It actually, if you're listening to a song, say on iTunes, the volume slowly fades on your computer and then fades up on your iPhone, almost making it seamless, hence the name. So you can continue right where you are in the song. And as cool as that sounds, I don't really need, if I'm listening to a song, I can start at the beginning. It's not that big a deal. But where I absolutely love it is for podcasts and audiobooks. So this has just fit my life so perfectly, because there are so many times I've gone onto my computer, downloaded 5 or 6 new podcasts, made a playlist, listening to it on my computer, then I suddenly got to run out and I got to either sync again, because if you do sync with the iPhone, it will find your place. But we all know how long it takes to sync. It's going to take a couple minutes to sync, even best case scenario. If you have to do a backup, it's going to take even longer. So if you're not in a hurry, the syncing that's built in iTunes is fine. But this is so quick on the go. So now I find myself so often right in the middle of a podcast or an audiobook, flip it over to my phone, go out, whether I'm out for 5 minutes or just running downstairs or whatever, come right back, hit the same button on the app, and then the audio transfers right back to your computer and it works. And if, for those of you wondering how it works, there's no actual magic happening. The app just makes it, the music has to be on both. So you're still, it's going to work on books, podcasts, and music that you have put on both devices. It's not like it's streaming over to you. You have to have the content on both devices. It's just transferring over in a smooth way to right where you left off.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, I'm just looking at the description right now in the App Store. The iPhone app is $1.99.
$1.99, sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, still, that's a pretty cool way, because I mean, I think that's happened to the best of us. But anyways, yeah, we've reached our time here. Once again, thanks for listening to the iPhone Podcast. Please rate us in iTunes. If you want to contact us on Twitter, you can do so. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada. Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLouis. You can also follow the iPhone Podcast on Twitter as well. We usually send out updates through our Twitter account. That's at twitter.com/, I think it's just iPhone_podcast.
Correct.
So there you go. Thanks again for listening, everyone. And we will see you next week.